Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast. Hello, Slackers. I hope your jowls are full of gravy and your hearts are sprinkled with sunshine dust. Welcome to the Slacker Podcast, a podcast where we talk to the finest musicians and artists and chart their history, starting with those early demos. And it's always the best place to start when you're trying to chart a history of a band, because you really get an idea of where it is they came from, and you also get an idea of how good they got as well. Because I mean, listen, we all have to start somewhere, and sometimes when you start at the bottom you sound a little bit shit and then you get really good. I mean, the demo that we've got today from our artist, I will reveal in about 10 seconds, is absolutely amazing. My name is Phil Taggart. You're very welcome to the next 60 minutes or so. You will never hear the first demo from my band because I'm not, I'm just not sharing it with anybody. It's not good enough. It's really not. listen, if you could give the podcast a little 5-star review and maybe write a little bit something as well. Maybe you could write a haiku. Maybe you could write a poem. A sonnet. Anyway, it doesn't matter what you write, I'd just be really thankful of it as well. The better it does with reviews and all that, the higher it goes up on the charts and the more people see it, listen to it, and that would make you the most dead-on person in the world. And I would probably take you out for chips and fizzy drinks, and then I'd never call you again. Today's podcast is with a man called Dizzy Rascal. Not his real name, but we'll get into his real name in the podcast. If you're new to the podcast and you're coming in because of Dizzy Rascal, number one, welcome the fuck in. You don't have to take your shoes off at the door. It's all good. I'm not one of those houses. Number two, you can go back and listen to the other podcasts that we have recorded. We're only a little baby podcast at the minute. We've done Wolf Alice, Bastille, The Manic Street Preachers, Declan McKenna. If you're interested in any of those artists or you just like the conversation, then go back and have a little listen. I've been a Dizzy Rascal fan for a long, long time, since day dot, really. So I didn't really feel like I had to do too much research on old Dizzy, because if you know anything about him, you know that it all started with Boy in the Corner, and that was the one that won the Mercury Music Prize way back in the early 2000s, and it was really the album that spurned on grime. Like, I know a lot of people will talk about other people and their relation to grime and what they did, but like, Dizzy Rascal really had a big footprint, if not the biggest footprint, in making grime what it is today. And then from there, he kind of turned into like a full-on pop monster beast who was like crushing everybody in the charts at that time. He was releasing tracks like Bonkers, tracks like Dance With Me, and genuinely he's just a really fascinating dude to sit down and chat about. And we don't just chat about music the whole way through it. We chat about culture, and I get some gossip about the times he is in Miami as well. But listen, that's only sort of half the story. Here's another little bit of it. Here's some clips.
I felt like there was more community in Bow, where I come from. Like, that's when I was there, felt like I knew everyone. When I moved out later on in life, that's where I've got more kind of isolated. I was heavy into Iron Maiden. I was heavy into Korn. And do you know what? I used to read Kerrang when I was little.
Uh-huh.
And I think I liked the imagery that went with it because of the response I'd get. People were like, you like that white boy stuff? Or you're like, you like the devil stuff. I just thought, like, he's massive. I thought it was just like, he's huge. So he's offered to sing this chorus for me. And why the fuck would I say no? He's Robbie Williams. Like,
we dig into some deep shit and some topics I didn't really plan us to get into either. So listen, I could plug a little bit more about loads of other stuff, but I'm not going to bother because I really want you to enjoy this one. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Dizzy Rascal, hello.
Well, good.
How's it going, man? You good?
There. Let me come and sit over here. Let's form.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna
just
do,
it's a little less formal now.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I don't want to be like looking deep down your eyes.
I feel like I'm being interrogated.
Offside. Yeah. Well, there is a spotlight in the room, and you are in like the Soho Fetish Dungeon Studios. Like.
Easy.
See, I saw.
No one told me that.
Listen, this is the sort of studio. I've seen, you know, you've done podcasts before. I saw a clip of the one you did with the Geordie podcast. And it, like, you know, it was lovely arena for a podcast, but he can't clamp you to a wall like I can in the Soho.
Aye, this is all getting mad. It's all mad. There was no warning. God damn.
You should read the fine print, is he?
There was no print. It's just like, yeah, you're doing this. Oh, shit.
What's going on? How's your day?
Day's beautiful, man. It's just been cold, proper cold all week. And then today it just decides to be sunny and nice again.
Sunshine is out.
Beautiful.
Sun's out, guns out.
Sun's out, guns out.
Like, compare mine to yours. Yours are significantly bigger. You've been hitting the gym.
I've seen some skinny dudes who you just don't want no problems with. So I don't even worry about that.
I'm like one of those people, like, you know, you'll read a story about in years to come where I'll lift a car off somebody. I've got like hidden secret strength.
Yeah, there you go. Now you just told everyone.
It's all on the inside. It's not on the outside.
Right.
So
on you, it's in you.
So when we start the podcast, we like to play like an early demo of something you do. Do you know which one I'm going to go for? Are you aware?
Of what song?
I'm going to play an early demo of yours, yeah.
Okay. No, I didn't know.
Right,
I'm fully blind right now to like everything that's happening.
Okay,
so
well
that's why it's gonna be good.
Right, here we go. I hope this is the right one I play. You know, sometimes when you're like playing somebody a piece of music, and
I know what it is straight away.
That was one
straight away.
Do you know? I'm looking down at the play counter. That wasn't even. It's not even registered as 1 second, and
right,
you got it.
Yeah, no, I mean, because I made the beat myself, so I already know what that is, and that's the first proper one I made.
Right. I'm gonna give you another second, right? And you have to name it.
It's crime. It's crime. I already know what it is from that noise. Spent hours like messing around with that.
I'm gonna blast it in, right? Give it a wee blast.
Oh, I got it wrong. It's not, but you know what? It's because I made them around the same time. This is where they're my bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My crime was okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My bad. You got me. Look how short. I thought I was proper.
Yeah, yeah. You were almost there. You know what? We didn't even joke about that. I told you on the last one. Come on. Check 1, 2, guns in the air. Fist on the case, but we don't care. Rifle, you see everything there. And I got shotgun spare. See them where the rascals near. Sounds like DEE's in the background. He's got that snarl.
I don't know where Double was around these times. I knew him, but he ain't on this one. Jeez. I need to find the proper version because you got this from the mixtape, innit?
Yeah,
where it's been reloaded. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's bringing the memories back, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Tripping back to an old place.
Yeah, like, I remember almost everything about this. Wicked. It's when I first proper branched off, like, I really took it serious.
Yeah.
I remember the studio was in Deptford. It was with Danny C. Danny C was the engineer. It was his studio. I used to go there. I made this.
What did you even know about getting into a studio at that point?
Because I already was making beats at school.
Yeah.
On Cubase and all that. So I think this was like the second proper studio I went to. The first one was one in Poplar, in the old Poplar swimming baths. And then this one was Deptford. It was that. I think I started off with Danny S and they ended up with Danny C, but they were both Dannys and I can't remember who came first.
You're like, yeah, which came first, the Danny or the egg?
Right. So it was, yeah, this one and Crime. I'm sure Crime was first, and then I made this, because if you hear them, they're quite similar.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. You, I think like at that stage, you probably don't have that many samples to like roll off.
Where did I even get them sample? I can't even remember.
Would you
but
say
I just
it was
know
like
that,
3 6 Mafia.
Yeah, that yeah ho and yeah. all that. That's what all that was. And then you, if you listen to it, you can hear the jungle influence, drum and bass influence. Those bass lines were drum and bass like. And then obviously the kind of the beat was garagey, like UK garage, and then kind of double time rap as well. All the stuff I was into, and they were just my pirate radio bars. The stuff I used to go and say on the radio or at the raves and the youth clubs and all that. Because this is like way before I Love You. This is like
what year? If you're like time stamping,
this might have been like 2000, I think about year 2000.
So like it predates even the word grime.
Way before.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, way before. Way before. This is before I was even with Roll Deep, before any of that. So there was no grime, there was no Esky, there was none of that.
What age were you when you did that?
This I had to have been, was I still in school? I was 16 or 17. There was no way I was older than that.
Yeah, yeah.
I might have been 15.
That's mad though, 15, like 15 16. Years old going yeah. straight to the studio. Because like 15-year-olds going to pirate radio at that stage probably wouldn't have been any new thing, but 15-year-old going to proper studio to lay it down would have been a little bit different.
Right.
Your head has to be in the game. You have to know what you want to do to be able to go
yeah,
there.
Focus, yeah, focus, because it's just me. And I went to dude that took a load of people with me all the time. I just went to the studio. So I understood from early about being in the studio late, focus, zoning and focus on one thing,
yeah.
knowing what I want, because I'm producing and I'm writing the song. And it was wicked because the guy on it was a dude from my estate called, his name was Joey, mm-hmm. but his MC name was Magic. And he was like, I thought it was a wicked MC. And he's just, that's who I had access to at the time.
You're like Joey, we're going studio.
Yeah, and he'd come with me. Like, I just, that's...
Who else
that was the beginning of all of it.
Who else were you running with like when you were making that sort of music?
At that time?
Yeah.
That would have been when, rest in peace, Storming. I was Storming DJ, or would have just been, maybe it was just a little bit after that, but I would have been, and so I would have been moving around with Nasty Crew. Those times there, yeah. Because that's like right at the beginning. Yeah, that's...
Where did you like fit in within that crew? Like were you like one of the youngers?
I wasn't in it, nah. No, I won't say... I was only like maybe like a year or two younger than Storming, because I was younger, but I wasn't like the younger. But I was just always me.
Yeah, yeah. Because I feel like these crews aren't like they're not like one of these things where you have to like cut your hand to shake each
some
other.
Some of them not
really.
Well, yes, yeah.
I feel like you can walk in and walk out of it.
Nah, I was a bit like that because I just. Was just always me. I was always part of little crews and all that, but I was always still doing my own thing. Like, I had my own bookings. Like, I had my own sound.
Yeah, yeah.
From early, you know what I mean? So I was always doing my thing, but I still linked up with other people.
Where does a 15-year-old get booked? Apart from, like, what? Suspension in school or something? Like,
no, because
like,
there was the early rave, so...
Yeah. What sort of music was like happening?
I'd say it was the
raves?
Early days of grime and... UK garage.
What are we talking like? Speed garage, bassline, stuff like that?
Bassline hadn't happened yet. No. But we had stuff that was similar to that anyway. We were being called Sublo, if I remember. Sublo was this kind of pre-dubstep and pre-gram. It would have been whatever Tubby was playing. Tubby and Slimzy, like Dump Valve stuff and Lick Shots and... This might have even been before that. Actually.
What were those raves like? Was it when you turned up to them?
Raves.
Were they in actual clubs? Were they in youth centres? Where were they?
Yeah, because of my age, the first around that time, yeah, it would have been youth centres. But then eventually, I got into like raves, which were the early raves were like Young Man Standing. That was one rave. And Rumble was another one. Stampede was another one.
These are underage raves or like
under 18s. That's what they were. They were under 18s raves. A lot of them.
So but, that's mad. Like you're like forming the future, and even like the adults who are like your peers can't even get in to see what it's like because they look like creeps.
There would have been older people there.
Yeah, yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then Rumble and Stampede came together. I remember. They were very wild. They were. Looking back, they were legendary. But yeah, anything could happen. And usually most raves, even if it was like house parties, even these were like proper organized raves, but anything could happen. Like,
yeah, like so you had security, you had promoters, you had like all the rest of it. It wasn't just like showing up with a sound system, hoping for the best.
Nah, Nah, it was like I said, proper security. But raves could get locked off at any point.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got used to that. Any party, anything to do with any like that, whatever you, what you'd call, I guess, the urban scene or whatever. Mm. You understood that a rave could just get locked off. Someone, there'll be a fight. Something would happen. The rave would just get locked off. People were used to that.
Scatter.
Just have to get out.
Who were the like posters you had on your wall as a kid?
When I was a kid, I had Tupac on my wall. Mainly Tupac, but then I'd have I had Guns N' Roses on my wall. I remember I used to have a drawing.
Basically, anybody with a bandana. Tupac had a bandana. Axl Rose had a bandana.
I thought I was more a fan of Slash.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was cool.
He looked, he's a proper rock star.
I had a big drawing of Matchman. Did you used to watch Shoot? I mean, did you used to read Shoot? No, or was it Match? It was Match and Shoot. There were two football magazines.
Yeah.
And I remember I drew a picture of him and that was always on my door when I was, so that's another thing on there. What other posters did I have? Bob Marley.
That's classic. I mean, my 12-year-old sister had Bob Marley on her wall. And I remember, like, she was given, like, £5 at the shopping centres. Like, that £5 is yours. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
And she came back with a Bob Marley poster that said, "Don't drink and drive, smoke a spliff and fly."
Yeah.
And my mum was like, "What the fuck?
Bob Marley's iconic,
I'm not giving you any money anymore."
Bob.
That's mad, though, because like, I love the fact that you were into, like, rock music as well, because I think that's a side of you that people don't really see or know that much.
I went through a crazy phase where people thought I was weird, and it made me want to do it more, I think.
Yeah.
Because you've got attention. So I was heavy into Iron Maiden. I was heavy into Korn. And you know what? I used to read Kerrang! When I was little.
Uh-huh.
And I think I liked the imagery that went with it because of the response I'd get. People were like, "Ah, you like that white boy stuff," or you're like, "Ah, that's you like the devil stuff, devilish," because all their stuff was based on kind of
the dark skulls and
all that kind of stuff there.
But it's made for teenage boys.
I was a teenager. By the time I was a teenager, I was doing all this.
Yeah,
this is when I was like 10,
right.
You know what I mean?
So you run the boat with a Slipknot mask on.
Yeah, remember, I was born in 84.
Yeah.
All this stuff was popping. Iron Maiden's been popping since whatever.
It's early 80s.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I was into this stuff. Well, 94, 93, whatever.
I mean, that's a good time. That's like, you know, coming out of grunge. Nirvana.
Big on Nirvana. I weren't as into Pearl Jam because it wasn't enough.
I've never liked Pearl Jam. I always found Pearl Jam to be a little bit preachy and a little bit whiny.
But at the time... If you
I'm
going to
get
Kerrang,
so much hate for saying that from Pearl Jam.
No, it is what it is, you know. But at the time, it felt like they were the two that were the most spoke about.
Mm.
They were like, I guess, what Blur and Oasis were to each other at the time, but for grunge.
Well, grunge killed Guns N' Roses and then Britpop.
See, by the time I got into it, I didn't know because I wasn't getting it in order.
Yeah.
They were still just playing whatever Nirvana stuff on MTV at the time when I got cable.
Did it make you want to play guitar?
Yeah. I played a little bit at like school concerts and all that. Or I'd play drums.
What, like at like a Battle of the Bands or something?
No, nah, to like they'd have a school, like every year, if you did music, which I always did music, so I did music class.
Yeah.
So they'd organise you into a groups or whatever, and then you'd find the song that you want to do, and then... at the end of the year or the end of the term or whatever, there'd be a school concert and you would perform it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. What was it like growing up in Bow? Because like, I've experienced Bow, but from a different angle because as you can tell from my accent, I'm not
from Bow.
Not natural E3, you know?
Right. Bow was like, Bow would be like, I don't know, I guess like This Is England or Shameless, but down south.
What about like Top Boy?
Top Boy, they'd have elements of that too. See, Bo, when I was growing up, was obviously it was mainly a white area, but it was still quite mixed. So, white people, like Asians or like Bengalis, and blacks, and a few other different people as well. But it was quite mixed. But you had the white, kind of the rough white element to it. You had the rough black element. It was just rough in here. but mixed.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some areas where it's just white or it's just predominantly thinking white was a bit more mixed.
Yeah. I guess that like that tightens you up as well. Like I grew up in an estate for about half my teenage life, sort of like half, you know, being a kid in the country And then when you're a kid in the country and you move into an estate when you're like 12 or 13, it's like Buddy the Elf.
Right.
You know, you're like, God, Jiminy Jillikers, guys, would you all like to go and play a game of football? Yeah. And then they kick your head in.
You learn that. You learn, yeah. Well, for me, it was the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
So I moved to the country later.
Yeah.
So like, okay, this is how it was. But I'll tell you one thing, though.
Does that mean, because obviously I came in with no edge to an estate.
Yeah.
Does that mean if you're going to the country, you're walking past the field and you're feeling like pretty edgy around a couple of cows, you're like going, what are you looking at me for?
Nah, you feel like more relaxed. As soon as you like kind of leave London and start getting back into the country, you feel the ease come off of you.
Yeah.
But I one thing that I've just always noticed is that I felt like there was more community in Bow, where I come from. Like that's when I was there, felt like I knew everyone. When I moved out later on in life, that's where it got more kind of isolated, and it didn't feel as much community spirit. And unless you're from somewhere like that, you grew up in the village, and everyone knows each other, and you stayed there. So
what's it like going back? Like when you roll back into Bow.
When I go there, it's not a place I ever stopped going to. But I guess stuff I notice more is just what they call gentrification.
Like, man, I moved there in 2012, and I was going past it very recently, and it's changed a lot in 6 years. I don't know how much has changed since you left.
It's changed a lot. But I don't feel like I missed it because I never stopped going there. So you just see it like most of London. It's just like bowls like Peckham or like all these places where just. I'd say it's getting even more multicultural. I remember being around there maybe like a year ago, and I was just coming just out of Bow because next in Poplar. Poplar's next door. So I went to school in Poplar.
Yeah.
And someone was driving, was walking past, and they had an American accent, and that was crazy to me. Because that's not, you don't get that. Yeah, you might get that in Notting Hill,
uh-huh.
But Bow's one of them areas. It's too kind of. Deep in,
yeah,
in London,
it's I don't know, it's hard to get to. Like it's not on like a on, like
right. It's a cut through. So you've come out of the Blackwall Tunnel, to go to up to what through the city or all that stuff. Yeah, it's different. But as far as going into the estates, any estate, like any area, you're gonna get the main road. But then when you go into estates, it's a different world.
Once you breach those like
main roads,
it's a whole different vibe.
Like we grew up around it. Luckily, being from Bow, we had those pirate radio stations that were really close, local. So there's always people around. That's why it didn't feel like.
Did they operate out of the estate?
Yeah, that's where most pirate radio stations were. They were usually in an estate.
That's something I want to know so much more about. Like all I know about pirate radio is like Corrupt FM and what DJ Target or Charlie Sloth have told me.
Yeah, Corrupt FM is it's like the Spinal Tap of grime, isn't it? what do they call it? Not mockery. It's
mockumentary.
Yeah, type thing.
Yeah,
but it is kind of that is what it's like. Yeah. See, but they're from Pirate Radio anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know that they are because that's how they do it. It's all so good.
Yeah, they're just making fun of it and all, but they do understand it. Like, and that is pretty much what it's like. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm fascinated by the lingo, like the whole inside.
Yeah, that was more of a garage thing.
It was more of a pre-grime where everybody was doing all that.
But I don't know. But I feel like way before grime. But yeah. I feel like that came from. I reckon it would have had something to do with like. Unknown MC's generation from when he was in Hijack, because around that time that's how rappers Chuck D, innit, that's how rappers mean what no that's how the rhythm, innit? That's how they said shit, innit? And what's that tune, I got the power, you know, with the
yeah
and the dude when he starts rapping, that's the kind of what the way that's the way he raps,
so it's kind of like taking an anglicized from America.
I get that era of you, but I could be wrong. But that's what it reminds me of. Uh-huh. Just because I know the unknown MC who made that song with Creed, good rhymes, oh boy,
yeah.
Because that to me that was the first tune that bus.
Uh-huh.
But unknown MC was in Hijack. You know Hijack were?
No,
they were like one of the first UK hip hop groups. but they rapped in American accents. That's what the thing was about. But he was the one who had a bit of a flow, and then he went on to Garage and became a big part of UK Garage.
Yeah, I've done so much like I missed out in so much time because like when I was in Ireland, all I was listening to was indie records, and I was starting to get into hip hop, and then got into grime in a big way, and did a lot of reading and researching about it because I was like, right, I'm not going to be able to catch up here. I'm like,
yeah,
but
it'll be hard to.
But like going back into like UK rap and stuff, I love like reading about like, you know, the early Westwood days, and even Dave Pierce, like he was like quite a big player in like hip hop back in those days as well. It's fascinating, really.
I remember when indie was the thing.
Do you remember the indie crossovers of like the mid-2000s where there was just, it was mashups? Everybody was doing mashups.
Is it? Not like, what are they called again? The ones that they're kind of doing like grime rock kind of, what are they called again?
Shit, Paddy, do you know?
Nah, not them. Nah, the one.
Shout out Slaves.
I can't remember them. Nah, it weren't Slaves. It was. Anyway, whatever. I remember when Blur played Myland Park.
Yeah.
Because I was a Blur fan. I did like Blur.
I'm a Blur guy as well.
And Oasis. Just that era. Well, they called it Britpop, but they were like the top of the indie thing, really, innit?
Yeah.
And you had Stone Roses. Was it Shed 7?
Shed 7 fan.
I went to Shed 7, but whatever was dominating Top of the Pops at them times did. It did. There was loads. Cranberries weren't. They were quite almost grunge, innit?
Yeah.
What's that? That song Zombie. Zombie.
Oh man, I've been to so many house parties where I've been absolutely ruined by people thinking they can sing fucking Zombie.
Are they from Northern Ireland?
Yeah, they're from Republic of Ireland. Yeah.
Republic.
I mean, they're from Ireland. Like
right, from Ireland. Yeah. Big tune.
Yeah. So like, I still to this day, when I'm on the radio, I get text messages about it. When I'm out DJing, I get requests about it. I mean, I Love You will follow you to the day you die, right?
Right.
It's such a tune. And like, what was the sort of moment leading into that? So from the demo, from where we were, leading up to that track?
Boy, that's a good question. I remember making the beat, and I wrote the lyrics. Did I write to make the beat first? I wrote the lyrics on top of Jay-Z, Is That Your Chick?
What, on the album sleeve?
No. I mean,
oh, like, on the beat, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so I was listening to it, and I wrote the lyrics. But not the instrumental. Sometimes I used to write songs while other songs were playing.
Yeah.
Which was weird because normally you'd write to an instrumental. But I think it might have been having the vibe of the other person on there help me write my own stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it was that. And then it was inspired by Ludacris's What's Your Fantasy as well. Because of the boy and the girl element, you know, going back and forth. Because I always liked that. And then I made the beat. I can't remember where I made the beat. I'm sure it's one of the beats I made on 9/11. I remember because I was in the studio
on 9/11.
Yeah,
as in like that. That's the day that you made that beat.
Yeah, I'm sure it is because it was either that or it was Stop That. One of those beats I was making, the actual beat for it. I'm sure I was working on one of the beats, and it was 9/11 because I remember Nick Cage saying to me. He was sitting there. I was there just on the computer, and he was saying, oh, fuck. I was like, what? He said, it's not good. And I said, what? He said, oh, he explained to me what happened. They crashed into the towers, and I didn't have a clue what was happening. I didn't know I didn't know what any of it was. I didn't know what the Twin Towers were. Who? What? What's going on? Like, it didn't register. But I'm sure it was one of those beats anyway.
I mean, you'll remember making that beat. I mean, everybody remembers where they were that day. I still don't know.
I'm still not. It was either that or Stop That. It's one of those beats.
Yeah.
But they were made around the same time.
It's like, you know, those big moments in the whole of world history. Like obviously, we're too young to know, but like, you know, where you were when the moon landings happened, where you were when like JFK got shot. Like, that's our generation's kind of like, where were you on that date? Do you know what I mean? I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. It's just such a significant, like...
No, but if you, like... I don't want to stray, but even other stuff, like, whatever, IRA, all that kind of shit, when I was a kid, I live in Bow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they blew up Canary Wharf.
Yeah.
Like, my house shook.
They blew up my town. Like, I come from a small town called Omagh in 1998. I was like, that was like the biggest atrocity of the whole Troubles.
Australia. Let me get back to what I was going back to. And then I got, I'm making the beat, writing it and all that. And then I remember I wanted to find a girl. But the girl was a girl I knew from youth club or from off my estate called Janine. But she was a singer. But I just wanted the girl that sounded like local and just there's someone I just knew, like, let me just hit her up, like, because I know she works in music at least.
Mm.
So
she'll be able to perform anyway, you know,
do
that.
Something. So I called her to say, oh yeah, I've got this song. Can you say this, and this? She thought she was coming to sing.
Yeah.
And in the end,
you're like, just speak.
Just do this. Yeah. It worked out. She didn't understand it. She ain't never heard no music. No one had heard no music like that before. It was just sounding mad. But I just had this, I had a vision for it. I just kind of, and it worked out.
But like, I think almost going back to the fact that you're into rock music and stuff like that.
You're right.
I mean, I don't think, would you have been able to create that sound without
being into Sepultura?
Do you know what I mean? Because it's angry, it's angsty, it kind of makes you want to like leave the room but also stay in it at the same time and rave but run away.
And at the time it was weird. It was even weird for the whatever was the gram scene
and
at the time.
And it was alien to the music press and alien to everybody, really.
Yeah, like I said, even in the gram scene, they were used to dirty bass lines and stuff that was still kind of the back end of the garage. But when I come through with that was just like industrial sounding, like overly grimy bass line. It wasn't in tune as well, like no real melody. But again, it came, I was into like really heavy metal, stuff that I didn't know what they were saying or talking about. But like, but I love Roots, bloody Roots, stuff like that. You know,
Roots.
Yeah. All that. Mad, yeah.
But then like you fast forward, Boy in the Corner comes out, you win a Mercury Music Prize, and then you're like, right, I just got Janine from Youth Club to come on and do this song with me, and now I'm sitting in a room full of like, I can't even remember who else was up for it that year.
I don't know, but I remember not really knowing what was happening. I just remember I knew what it was because Miss Dynamite won it the year before.
Yeah.
Everyone was proud of
it. I mean, that must have felt like a bit of a coup, even that. Like, you know, 2 years in a row, you've got two incredible artists in, like, you know, one garage and one soon to be grime, really. I guess people didn't know what it was then.
No, it was good, but it was good because Dynamite was one that, you said, our scenes interlocked. We were the babies of that, of garage. We were the kids who they didn't want in there, cause the hoodies.
You gotta go do your own thing.
Well, we did our own thing. We were still on the estate. There were still people my age that were still going to the raves and all that, but they were kids. Somehow they'd get in, really, like. But we were the youngers, and they'd give us our own room. In the building, there'll be the garage rave going on, and there'll be the little graphic. It was more of like a niche.
The playpen.
It was like more of a niche thing anyway. That's room. I let him have that room over there.
Yeah.
And then obviously it took over.
And then that room becomes the small room.
The main room, yeah.
Like, it's weird, isn't it?
That's how things
are. But I talked a lot,
I was just about to say, I watched Dynamite on stage at those raves, holding her own, like as a female MC, but getting as much response as anyone. So I watched her in the hood, just watching. So it was amazing to see her do that and then be as big as she was.
That crossover happens, like, you're probably thinking, right, well, if she can do it, that opens the door.
No, I wasn't thinking that. Nah, I wasn't. I guess I was making music by then, but that would have been around the time, you see those beats that you just started off with?
Yeah.
I think that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
When Dynamite was in, before she won, so maybe a year before she won the Mercury, it would have been around that time. Because by the time she'd won the Mercury, I'd already had I Love You. I'd already made my album, or I was maybe halfway through it.
I
Love You was definitely out.
Yeah.
I'd shot the video for Fix Up Look Sharp.
Yeah.
So that's about where I was. So the album was done. Yeah.
It's still, Fix Up Look Sharp is still the track that is played in every single club ever, to this day.
I love that.
Like, simply because it's a great track. And also one of the easiest things to mix in the history of mankind. You've got me out of a shithole so many times. I've been doing DJ sets and I'm like, this is not going well. Fuck. What's my break glass for emergency track?
Amazing. I don't think I'd ever heard that song before I did it. I understood it.
Yeah.
When Nick played the record, I was like, yo, yeah, that. And then like, if you give me 16 bars for that and then put that chorus in, I'm gonna rap over that of it. I just understood and it just worked. I just used to have like these ideas and just run with them back then. It worked.
Fix Up Look Sharp, you're halfway through the podcast. Okay, so time for me to plug a little bit here. I've got a live show in Portrush in Northern Ireland coming up. I actually went to university just around there as well, so it's going to be like returning to the scene of the crime. It's a festival called the Atlantic Sessions, and it is happening on Friday, 16th of November. And I've basically cherry-picked the best bands in Ireland to come up and play at it as well. I've got a band from Dublin called All Twins. I've got a band called Brand New Friend who are from that area. I've got Son of the Hound. I've got Susie Blue. Basically the best. And it's all under the Slacker banner. So if you want to come to that, I will put link to tickets just below. I've been running these Slacker nights for quite a while and been selling them out in the London shows that we've been doing for about 4 years. And I've put stages on a festival and a couple other places too as well. So yeah, it'd be awesome. If you're from Northern Ireland or Ireland, come say hello on Friday the 16th of November. Okay, that's me done for plugging stuff for a little while. I've also got this book coming out very soon, but I want to leave that for a while and talk about that a bit more in depth in a further podcast. Okay, right, enough of crushing capitalism. Let's get back to Dizzy. Here's a very interesting comparison for you. You know when like Bob Dylan went from like being like the voice of a generation and the folk artist to being playing electric guitar and people started shouting Judas at him? Because he started playing the electric guitar instead of playing his acoustic guitar.
Right.
Was that what happened to you when you were like went pop? When you went start making pop records instead of making the boy in the corner? Did you feel like that sort of friction with the fans that were there from like the early days? They were like, "How dare you make Dance with Me?"
I didn't feel it until the album after, because social media wasn't as big. So
how were people connecting with you? Like
I said, like this, when Dance With Me came out, that I think that just YouTube maybe just kind of started, and I wasn't focused on that kind of stuff. So all I was seeing was just good vibes.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting too much of the negativity from whatever the grime scene and all that, because like I said, it wasn't as connected. You had MySpace and all that, but it wasn't. Everything just got bigger and it was just massive. It wasn't until after. Maybe when the album The Fifth, once the Robbie Williams thing, that because you see the YouTube comments, that's when you realize, oh, there was a bunch of people that are just like not happy.
Yeah, even when I was really into like your early stuff, when I saw a collaboration with Robbie Williams, I was like, what? No.
But you know what? because I just know myself, innit. So I'd never paid that much attention.
But you're going to do what you want to do, and that's why you got here, and that's why you stayed here.
Standard. Like, but it's just music anyway. Like, some people get a bit carried away with themselves.
Yeah.
But I've never paid that much attention to Robbie Williams to know that people felt that kind of way about him. I just thought that he's massive. I thought that it was just he's huge. So he's offered to sing this chorus for me, and why the fuck would I say no? He's Robbie Williams. Like, I say, nah, sorry, you can't. Yeah. Nah, don't want it. Example was supposed to sing it, and then he did sing it, and it didn't sound right.
Yeah.
So Robbie Williams offered to sing it. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, why not? Yeah, you used to be in Take That. Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah, massive.
I saw when you were on your Instagram talking about Boy in the Corner being 15 years old, you were like, right, if I'm going to make something as important as this, and if I don't, I'm going to contact Robbie again.
Yeah. Fuck it. Listen, man, you see, sometimes music connects you to people where it brings more to your life than just whatever hits. And it was a hit, by the way. It was like number five at a time when records really sold. But just even like going to his house and just jamming with him in his own environment.
Is that what you made it? You made it in Robbie's house?
He did record it.
I'd say he
did record it at his house, yeah. But at the time,
he's not living in a one bedroom flat, is he? Like,
no, his neighbours were Slash and Paris Hilton.
Fuck.
So I went there. So that's
you're
amazing.
Guns N' Roses
fan,
so right. You have to go next door.
Right, see what I'm saying? So, and he told me a bunch of stories, which is amazing. Let's see, these are stories that it's just amazing to just have and just in your memory.
Yeah.
But even just like mad thing that he said, yeah, if you look out there at the window where he lived,
LA?
California, just maybe outside of LA, whatever. But he's saying, you see, like the valley, whatever it is, the scenery.
Yeah.
So if you look out there, yeah, that's the opening shot or opening scene in E.T. Like,
what?
That's, you know what I mean? That's kind of. I don't know if it makes sense the way I'm explaining it or describing it.
No, but like it feels like you're just living in a movie. You're like looking around you and everything makes sense.
No, I looked out of the window and he's saying that horizon there is the horizon that they used to shoot the opening scene of E.T.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that, it was the movie, yeah.
Is that, like, part of the reason why you moved to Miami?
Nah. I just moved to Miami because everything was just so mad. That's after Dancing Me, Bonkers, after everything just went mad. All those number ones of one album went platinum.
You couldn't walk down the street, you couldn't buy milk anymore, could you?
Right. And then I went to Miami on holiday because it was the only place that was warm other than the place I wanted to go, which was Antigua, because I went there the year before. Mm. And then the place I wanted to go back to was full up. So my travel agent said, oh, you should go to Miami. Right, and I've been to Miami a few times. I went to Miami in 2004 for the old first, well, my first Ultra is when it used to be on the beach.
Yeah.
I've done a few shows there when I toured America. So I've done Miami at least twice. I didn't think nothing of Miami.
I've never been. All I know is what I know from the movies.
Right. And I never saw that side of it young, really. Not really. Never cared about it. But when I moved there that time there, again, it was Christmas on New Year's. So I was able to walk down the street. I was just going for walks every day. I made friends. And then
were you making music out there? Back. Were you hanging out?
No, not straight away.
No?
Not straight away. No, I was there for year. I stayed for a few months and then I came back to England. Then I went back.
You and
then
Lionel,
I bought a place.
You and Lionel Richie just making the best beats possible at Miami?
You don't live in Miami. That's LA. But I've always gone to LA, but then I went to LA that maybe the year after to make the fifth.
Yeah.
Make the rest of it, working with different producers there. And then it kind of turned into a long holiday, a long work holiday.
Yeah.
And I had my place in Miami, so I was going back and forth from there and not coming back to England a lot. But there was a point, you said Lionel Richie, there was a point where I was in, I was in Nicole Richie's birthday party.
Yeah.
Because somehow I got really tight with Joel and Good Charlotte Boys.
I can't remember their names.
Am I going to forget their, I'm sat and just me spend so much time with these boys. It's embarrassing that I'd even say that.
The Good Charlotte Boys. Yeah. So,
we got really tight. It doesn't sound like it now, but we got really tight. And then so I used to go to their house, both their house all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them was Maritim and Nicole. So then I ended up going to a birthday party in a big hotel there, the whole corner. So Samantha Ronson was DJing. One of the Olsen twins was there. I embarrassed myself with her.
What? No, I just
went up to her.
Did you flirt?
It weren't much of flirting. It was me thinking I was giving a compliment and being nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe coming across a bit of a prick.
What, a backhanded sort of?
Not being an arsehole, but just didn't come across very cool. Because she come up to me, she'd be introduced, I said, yeah. Oh my God, I've loved you since you were this big.
And she's like, get me out of here.
She's looking at me really?
You're one of those ones?
That's what it felt. Yeah, that's what it felt
that's
like.
The thing,
she didn't say it.
With celebrities, if you're at a celebrity party, you can't celeb the celeb. Or you can't walk up to somebody. I think that's one of the things I was taught when I started at radio, right? And I'm interviewing an artist.
Yeah.
Don't go up and talk to them about the one thing that they're big for, because that's not the one thing that they want to talk about.
Usually not, But what else? You're an Olsen. I'd never thought I'd meet an Olsen twin. But she was cool about it anyway. Maybe it was just in my head. Maybe I thought she just didn't say much. And then I sat down and I was with Nelly Hooper, who I met before. He introduced me to Quincy Jones. And Lionel Richie was there, obviously, because it was his daughter.
Yeah.
So that was
amazing. Do you want to say to Quincy, hey, do you want to fire up the headphones? Let's go lay some tracks down.
No, he was just, I was introduced to him. And first thing he said was, music's finished. Music business is finished.
Okay, then. So we had start up some real estate business, will we?
Yeah, he was saying cell phones in China. That's what he told me. It was all about cell phones in China. So he was going back and forth about that.
Yeah.
To the point where he told me off.
What?
He told me off for attempting to have a debate with him.
He was like, listen, I'm Quincy Jones.
But it was pretty much I made Thriller. How many records you sold? He said that to me. It was amazing. He said that. That was wicked. And then he said, what does he say? He said, you're not listening. He said, why did God give you two ears? I said, what? He said, so you can listen. He said that. I'll never forget that.
But the thing is, he's at that age where he could be your dad. So you can't.
He's your granddad.
Yeah, granddad. You can't. Yeah. You can't go back to Quincy Jones and go. You can't stand toe to toe. Nobody can stand toe to toe with him. He's the greatest record producer of all time.
So they say.
Yeah, and you're like, I don't care.
No, it's not that I don't care. It's that I've just come off the back of a bunch of number ones on a platinum independent album.
High,
put out myself. Yeah. and you just, you're Quincy Jones, and you just told me, you just, before anything, not even congratulations, our music industry is dead. Like, what? That's not what I'm trying to hear.
That's
right
not what
now,
you
innit?
Need.
But he, like, afterwards, then he was like, ah, you got to know your roots. It's Dizzy Gillespie, like all those jazz guys. It's not Jay-Z. It's, all right, cool. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from London. I said, no, where are you really from? I said, oh, okay, no, I'm from Ghana and Nigeria. I said, that's right. I was like, wait, so where are you from? So I'm from Cameroon, which I never knew that Quincy Jones from Cameroon.
No, I didn't know that
either. So that was good. So I got a nice schooling, and it's one of them ones that I'm glad that happened, because that was a real exchange. You could have been like one of them ones that, hey Quincy, this is Dizzy. Like, hey, how you doing? And that's it.
And that's it. Yeah,
yeah.
You got some wisdom out of it. Are you like big on your roots? Like, do you have family there?
No. I think I've got family there, but I've never really ventured over to that part. Yeah, no, at some point I will, but I just never did.
I was listening to Raskit again today in sort of preparation for this, but I was listening to it a lot last year when it came out.
Mm.
And because it'd been a little while since, like, I know you did like all of the crazy videos a couple of years beforehand. You put out like 3 videos and they were fucking amazing. Each and every single one of them. Like, one of them was like almost like a Halloween song, and it was
a couple
manner
of stacks.
I'm forgetting it. I'm forgetting
that,
the name.
That
of
was
it.
An EP as well. Yeah, yeah. I almost forgot about that. Yeah,
yeah. The videos for that were incredible. But then when Raskit came out, I was like listening to it on repeat, over and over and over again. And the one thing that kept going through my head, and I remember it going through my head at the time, and again today, I was like, this guy is the king of the put down. Like, he's like the king of swear words and the king of the put down. I was just like, I felt like I had to walk around with a bucket of ice to put it on myself for all the burns that were happening.
I was saying some shit.
You say words that I've never heard in rap music before, like
right.
When in reference to your private area, knackers,
very, very, yeah, very British.
Yeah,
like,
it's
stuff,
so
yeah.
British.
But that's what I was always about, because of where I come up and grew up. With. I grew up around Cockneys.
The first person I ever heard do that was Roots Maneuver.
Right. Yeah, legend.
When he was rapping about cheese on toast, I was like, I've never heard that before.
Right.
That's amazing.
And those are the things that I took it even further, because I grew up in Bow. Like they say, you were a Cockney if you was born under the sound of the Bow Bills.
Yeah.
I feel
like Conor McGregor from UFC is a fan of yours, like just from the way he talks sometimes. I feel like you would be a good person to walk him in.
I want to spar with him. If I meet him, I would have to spar with him. Like,
do you martial arts?
Yeah, I like a bit of Thai boxing, or sometimes I like boxing all that as well. But just when I meet people like that, I just always want to get in the ring with him. Not to like be...
Not macho-wise, but you want to see what it's like?
Yeah, I want to, because the best way to learn is if you get in with someone really skillful, and they usually don't take the piss out of you.
Yeah.
They can usually got better control.
Uh-huh.
But then if you can just kind of keep up a bit, you'll learn some stuff. It's almost more dangerous to get in with someone who's
not trained.
Or yeah, not as good. Sometimes they've got more to prove, and it might turn into a bit of a brawl.
Plus the fact, if you're sparring with somebody, like, does somebody not just want to go, right, I want to knock out Dizzy Rascal?
Yeah, and that's all good, but that's a problem for everyone, because if you do that, you'll see the other side of me.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Nah, because I'm ready for that. I'm not about to just let people just beat me up. I know that, because I've just come to learn. That's all I care about.
It's restraint, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't come here to just beat everyone up and show how tough I am. I come like, this is a sport. I respect it as an art. Like,
yeah.
So don't take the piss.
See, like in 2013, right? There was a bit where you were like kicking off on Radio 1, right? And I always thought this was really funny, right? Because while you were tweeting about Radio 1, I was on air at the time, and I played your record while you were while you were tweeting. You were like, Radio 1, don't play me anymore. And I was live on air, so I just stuck on one of your records.
No, I wasn't saying they don't. I was telling them not to play
me
anymore.
I've always wanted to say that.
Yeah. No, I wasn't telling. I'm not saying they don't play me no more. I'm saying don't fucking play me. That's what. I was having a rant. I think that was my first official rant. I'd gone so far in my career avoiding all that. Like, that's probably my first big tweet, because I just didn't want to engage in none of that bullshit. But I find the phone was in my hand, and it just became so normal that everyone did that
yeah,
I ended
yeah.
up doing it. I've
yeah.
done it a couple of times now, and I hate it.
It's dangerous though, isn't it? Like, if you're up there, if you've got like that sort of...
It's not dangerous really, because fucking, you know, I find that people... I feel like people have got more they're so used to seeing fuckery and hearing about fuckery now that everyone's more numb to shit.
Yeah.
So, like,
that's true.
It's no shock. So, it's hard to even really tarnish anyone's career anymore. That's what it feels like, because some of the most people have been publicly, had all their dirty laundry flung out there publicly and had the most slanderous things said about them and proven to an extent, and it hasn't taken them down. That's where we're at. So, it almost, you can just say what you want. But just as a case of pride, I always pride myself on not doing that. I always pride myself on being stronger. I think it's nonsense, like telling everyone how you feel. Now, I avoid social media. If I would be bigger, probably, or just more in everyone's faces if I was more on social media, but I don't like it.
I agree. Like, I find social media very, very stressful sometimes. I enjoy it. Like,
no, everyone does.
For the most part, right?
Right.
But, like, for what I do, I have to be on social media. And
no, but so do it, I.
Yeah. And but, so, sometimes I just want to, like, not let anybody know anything about my life and just sort of sit in my house and play FIFA and eat some food and
it works
nothing,
for some people,
you know?
Man, it does work for some
it's
people.
Instagram's the one that gets me, really. It's like everybody living the perfect life and then you're just like, mate, you're not though, do you know?
Yeah,
especially just, when it's people that you know, you're like, just living my best life, and you're like, fucking hell, let's have a word.
No, and how many photos does everyone need? Look, it's me again, it's here, selfie number 10,000. This is what I look like. Nah, I looked a little bit different than I did 10 minutes ago.
So the new stuff you're doing with Skepta, like, right. You know, you guys work together a lot back in...
No, never.
This is the first time.
We've been on radio before. So yeah. We went on the Mr. Jam thing.
Oh, man. I've watched that Mr. Jam video, that session that you guys did, the freestyles.
Yeah.
So many times. I remember coming home from work and I was like, I was on, I think, maybe the same night, but I was on probably around about the same time and I didn't see it going off. And I heard about it and I got home and my friend had it on the TV,
yeah,
on the iPlayer or whatever. And we rewatched it so many times. The way that you came in, it was like wrestling. It was like somebody reappearing. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, and I haven't heard from him in like a little while. And then you just come back in like the fucking Undertaker or whatever. And it's like, whoa, holy shit.
That's mad. That's mad because me and Fecky were just watching it from next door. And I was like, we were supposed to just perform our song afterwards, yeah. And it's like, well, they're there. It's not like I don't know them. I've known Lethal since those records you're playing.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first album I appeared on was the Morfire Crew album. Mm-hmm. Not even my own, the Morfire Crew when it came out. So I've known him for, so he's there. He's with Temps, who's actually a relative. And then you got JME on them, and it's like, we might as well just go in there, innit? So it wasn't planned. So that's why.
But
I think that's made it better.
That's what made it better, because when you came in, you saw the other people turning around, going, "All right, this is just it's like this is leveled up,
right?
This is about to go off into space,
proper."
That video's got serious hits.
That's just legendary. And then General Levy came in. And then that's when we became kids. Yeah. That's when we became kids, because that record.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, that he was like one of the first crossover as well from the scene, really, innit? You had original Nutter, but I feel like General Levy, it was original. There was nothing like it. There's never been anything like that.
No, like that's a moment in time, and fair play to Jam as well. He played it well.
Yeah.
Like he had all the rhythms ready to go. And he was like a kid in a sweet shop as well. He was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I mean, we all were.
No, it's like an old grime set or whatever, innit? Like, just foundation thing, innit?
Big time. I'm really excited. Are you and Skepta going to do more stuff together? Like, it feels like that song feels good.
It does feel good. And considering that, like, imagine we made this song. I hadn't seen him since the Mr. Jam thing.
Oh, right, since that, yeah.
So that's the first time I see him. And
he's leveled up again since that.
Of course. And then we made that within, 2 hours? So, like, we work well together.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's our first time.
Uh-huh.
So it would be good to do something.
I'm very excited about the JME album. He's been away for a bit.
Yeah, he's going to come with something different, isn't
it? Yeah, big time, big time. So you've got Somewhere to Be, which I want to talk about briefly before you go, right?
Yeah, man.
You're getting your picture hung up in the National Portrait Gallery, and that's where you're going directly after this.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What is happening with that?
They just told me about it and I just accepted. When these things like this come and they kind of knock you sideways. Just like with the thing in Ireland, the Phil University, they're giving me the, it's not like a doctorate, it's a what?
Trinity College. That's a big one.
As well, yeah.
Yeah,
so I'm saying
Trinity
stuff
College
like that.
Is like the...
Yeah, so these things that
in Queens,
and this thing that you're talking about, the natural port, these things just come. I'm never thinking about stuff like that.
You're gonna be Dr. Dizzy Rascal.
I am.
Are you already?
Yeah, because I got one a few years ago from East London University. They gave me a doctorate.
If I got a doctorate, I wouldn't even chat to anybody unless they called me Dr. Phil.
You could, and the thing is, you can technically you are allowed to do that.
Yeah, totally.
I did it to an estate agent once in Miami. And like I put down doctor first,
and then he was
showing me around a few places. And goes like, and he's like, "So, what are you a doctor of exactly?" Like, I don't think he was convinced. Doctor of the arts,
doctor of the arts.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the sort of doctor that if somebody's having a departure on a plane that you don't want,
nah.
Going, is there a doctor in the house? You're like, yeah.
Unless you want me to sing them a song,
I will sing them. I will revive them back to life. What was I going to say? Yeah, we've got one final bit, which is, what advice would you give to anybody starting out in music right now? What could you like?
Music industry dead. Cell phones, China. That's it.
This is the perfect place to end it. Dizzy, thank you very much. Thanks for doing this.
Thank
you. It's been a lot of fun.
Don't gas me. The EP is out now. Go check it out. Yeah.
Right, he's not wrong. He definitely isn't. The new EP, Don't Gas Me, is out right now. I'm really hoping that him and Skepta get back together for a few tunes because it works. I mean, Skepta on production, Dizzy on the bars, Skepta coming in for a little bit here and there. It's like Real Madrid. It's like watching the best of the best play with each other over and over again. That didn't sound right, did it? But honestly, I hope they make more music coming up in the next little while. Can we start a petition for this? A change.org petition, maybe? I don't know. If you like the podcast, then please share it with your friends. Rate and review it. And listen, we're still a little baby podcast at the moment, so we have a lot of room to grow. And, you know, that growth happens by you guys spreading it around and sharing the podcast and telling people to listen to it and doing the nice things of rates and reviews and subscribes. I'm so sickened of having to say that, but like it really does help. Also, if you're listening to this on the Wednesday that it comes out, I will be on Radio 1 tonight at 7 p.m. and tomorrow at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m. Also, BBC Introducing Live is happening at the Tobacco Dock on the 8th, 9th and 10th of November. If you're into bands, if you're into making music, producing music, or basically anything to do with the music industry, that place is like fucking Disneyland to you on the 8th and 9th and 10th. You buy a ticket, you go down there, and you will have like 400 speakers from across record labels, artists, like the whole thing. People will be there listening to your demos, passing it around. Like, I remember going to like these BBC Introducing events before, and people have handed me a demo and it's ended up being played on the radio that night. That's how quick things can work at that. I mean, the songs still have to be good. But I'll put the ticket in the link for the BBC Introducing Live Festival at Tobacco Dock on the 8th, 9th and 10th of November. That's it for me. Lots of love to you all. Thank you for your time. All the best. Goodbye. Much love. Bye-bye.